Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on March 1st, 2009, and now it is now 8:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good evening, everyone. This evening, we're going to have a little change of venue. We're going to have Mr. James Protzman. He's the author and progressive political blogger and co-founder of the popular news commentary website, BlueNC.com. And I believe he may be on the air right now.
I am. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Protzman. Thank you so much for being our guest this evening. And just allow me for a second to adjust a few things. We have a few wires here, I think, that are loose. Can you hear me well?
I can hear you well.
Okay, very good. Okay, well, thank you so much. I just gave a very, very brief introduction. You are an author. You have your book right now that has been published is Jesus Swept, which I read and I enjoyed very much, and we'll get into that in a moment. You are a progressive political blogger and co-founder of the popular news commentary website, BlueNC.com. And you are a very accomplished person, aren't you? And maybe why don't you do this? Let me allow you to tell our audience a little bit about yourself, and so we'll know where you're coming from, and then we can find out where we're going.
Okay, very great. I'll give you a quick laundry list that's pretty chaotic, but let me just sort of run it through. Born and raised as a Southern Baptist, attended the U.S. Naval Academy and was an officer in the Navy, jumped out of airplanes for a living for 5 years, got to graduate school, learned about journalism, started an ad agency, started a research company, started being a blogger, started a novel, and now I'm on my blog first Liberty Talk Radio interview. So there you go.
Well, you seem to have such a diversity of experience in your life. Do you know how you progress from one entity to the other and how you arrived at where you are today?
I would say that in my mid-adult life, I basically got hooked on words. I love to write. And in all my jobs, except for the Navy, I've been a writer. And the progression that I've gone through is just more and more and more fun with words, finding stories, finding new ways of thinking about language. I mean, you know, the world is language, and so I think we should understand it and have fun with it.
Okay, well, before we get started, I do like to tell our audience that we do invite you to call in. Our call-in number is 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. We have four open lines. Please call in. Do not be embarrassed. We'd love to hear you and hear your questions, and it'll make for a much more interesting program. Now, I don't know how anyone makes the transition from... Now, you're a journalist as well. Am I correct?
Well, not so much a journalist in the news sense. I've been involved in advertising and PR over on the corporate side for 30 years, but not as a professional journalist, no.
I have to ask you, how do you make that quantum leap from being a non-author to being an author? I mean, that's got to be that first thing. I mean, that has got to be, because I have been asked by many people to write a book, and I've always refused because I never thought what I had to say was profound enough, was different enough, because everything that I know has already been done, said, and thought of, and I never felt it would be unique enough. and yet you took that plunge. Could you tell us how you made that decision and why you made that decision?
Well, I think one of the things you and I may have in common is our interest in the separation of church and state.
Right.
And I believe that that is an important, critically important issue right now. And I think that, and this will sound a little weird, but I think that our reverence for religion is part of the problem, that we allow it to extend beyond its natural boundaries into government and public policy. And I don't like that. And, you know, and I want us to do better. And so part of this book is about faith and politics, trying to make there be healthy skepticism about both. So that's part of it. The other thing is I have this bumper sticker called Do Good, Nice, Have Fun, which is the mantra that I live my life by, and this book tells that, lays that out as well. So I had some stuff I wanted to do.
Now, why did you... By the way, I enjoyed your book very much, but I was so disappointed that Liz dies towards the end. I mean, I shouldn't be giving that away, but I was very disappointed, you know, because she was, in fact, my favorite character in the entire book. Although she wasn't the main character, she was, I don't know, maybe she was the main character. I'm really not certain, because when I reflect back, I identified with practically everyone. The two that I never did like very much was Frank. I thought he was kind of a boob in a way, and of course Sinker. Sinker, he was a quintessential loser, you know. I wanted to see him, you know, go away somehow. Anyway, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's fun that you picked up on Liz. In the first few years of this book, it was about her. Hook didn't even exist. It was about Liz.
Oh, I see.
And she's always been really close to my heart.
Well, you know, you sort of get enraptured with Liz. I mean, you really like her. You know, you want to get to meet her. You want to see this person. I mean, I really wanted to drive there to her home and meet her. You know, she was such a warm, engaging person. And as most good authors do, as you have done, they print, they write, or they verbalize what most people think but would never say. And this is what I liked about your book. And no, really, it's true. You know, in most good books, this is what happens. I mean, people, you have to walk through their thought process, and this is what makes the book so engaging, you know. And you say, well, I've thought of that before, but you'd never admit it. And I found myself doing that, and I found myself identifying with every one of your characters in one way, shape, or form. And I don't know if that speaks very poorly of me.
Oh, I love that. I'm honored to hear that. That I think an author couldn't get a higher compliment than that.
Well, great.
Because you know, there's a little bit of everybody in everybody, and you know, I think I'm just having fun with that.
Now, why did you decide? Well, I want to get into religion. Believe it or not, I do want to talk about. I love talking about religion, and in the interest of true disclosure, I want to admit that every time I mention religion on this program, I get a host of hate mail. And even if it's in non-critical, it seems that it presses somebody's button the wrong way. And I get email, and typically I'm associated with the devil. They'll never listen to my program again. And oh, it's amazing. If I've read you some of these, you would not believe it. You'd think these people were totally demented. And you'd think, I got on the air and said, you know, the all Baptists are wrong and horrible and they're going to go to hell. I mean, you'd think I would say that, but just alluding to religion or saying that maybe, you know, in our process of thinking and of through this process, we shouldn't make, you know, our religious dogma, you know, place us in a box where we can't think through it. I get email that's unbelievable. I mean, it's just hate mail, but I want you to know that. So I'm gonna get hate mail. Yeah, I'm gonna be prepared for hate mail. Why did you elect to take the approach that you took not so much the format of the book, where you really have it was like a Seinfeld episode where you have three things going on, three separate venues going on at the same time, and they all meet at the end. But why did you take the approach that you took to espouse your philosophy?
Well, you know, as I mentioned at the top of the call, I mentioned that I was raised as a Southern Baptist, and so I'm still working through that. But what I've come to believe is that if I could crack open, let's say we were both Christians or both anything, and I cracked open your head and my head and looked inside, even though we said we believed the same thing, I would see something different. It's not exactly the same. And what that means to me is that we all make up the stuff to match our own view of the world. And I wanted to make up something so preposterous that you really couldn't take it seriously, and yet it can be taken seriously in a way that kind of challenges a lot of what people think about, you know, what's holy and what's sacred and what role that should have in our lives. And my view is, at least it should be fun. And so this is fun with religion, and
okay,
a lot of people don't like that.
What is the one thing that you want people to take away after reading your book? And by the way, I want to promote your book. I want to make sure we repeat your book. It's Jesus Swept. Could we tell our audience how they can purchase your book? Where is it purchasable?
The best way is to go online to Amazon or my website. It's jesusswept.com, and everything you need to know is right there.
Okay, folks, buy the book, because as a result of this program, I'm sure it's going to be catapulted right to the New York Times bestseller list.
Oh,
I can see it right now.
Don't
count on it, but we like to
wouldn't
say that.
No, wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't it be great? I would feel great. Believe me, I would really feel good about that. All right, so we have... what did you want people to take away as a result of reading this book? That one thing that you wanted them to take away?
Six words: do good, be nice, have fun.
Okay.
That is why I wrote this book.
All right. I had problems with that. I mean, in that I didn't understand it. I mean, I'm not that smart. You wrote a smart book and a dumb person's reading it. I'm usually asked a question, for example, do you believe in God? and my response is, well, what do you mean by God? And of course, that goes way down the list. And they say, well, you know what God is. I said, no, I have no idea what you're referring to. And this refers back to what you just said, that if we opened each other's heads, even if we were the same denomination, religion, whatever, you know, we'd see totally different things. And we see things different in a different light, even if we went to the same schools,
right,
and the same family and the whole bit. And I agree with you. And
right,
I ask people, I said, well, what do you mean by God? And then they have difficulty in definition. They say, well, high order. I said, well, you're asking me if I believe in high. What do you mean by that? And usually at this point, they want to hit me. But you see where I'm coming
right
from. And I don't know where you're coming
yes
from. And I think when you said, when I read that, you know, be nice, do good, be nice, and have fun.
Do good, be nice, have fun, yeah.
Yeah, I should have that memorized. I read it 1,000 times. And I say, but I really wonder, it's like, you know, do you believe in God? I really wonder what he means by that when he says,
yeah,
you know, do good. I said, what do you mean by that? And I had a real
yeah
problem
let
with
me,
that.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what I mean, and then we can try that on. And I think it like everything, of course, it's different for everybody. And people will say, well, what do you mean by good? What do you mean by nice? What do you
That's
mean by fun?
Right.
What I'm trying to say is that in your own head, in your own life, there is a place where those three things overlap, where you could ask yourself, am I doing good? Am I being nice? Am I having fun? And notice whether or not you are, just in your own mind. And my suspicion is the sweet spot where those three things overlap is more alike in many people than the separate parts of do good, be nice, have fun. So if you're actually able to do some good and be nice while you're doing it, not be a jerk, and on top of that, and this is gravy in my book, having fun while you're doing it, that's like heaven. That's like as good as it's going to get.
Right.
And my view is that's worth going for.
But it really is different for everyone. I mean, the doing good is...
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is where the hate mail comes in. But I have people that I know, acquaintances. I will not call them friends. I will call them acquaintances who are overtly religious. And in my opinion, they always seem to do the wrong thing. And they do it intentionally. I mean, it's not that they made a mistake. I mean, you know, we all make mistakes. I get up in the morning. It's amazing. I find my way to the house, you know. But it seems that they're wired differently. And it's a way that they are wired. I guess the way religious people are wired, I used to be wired. I'm not wired like that anymore. And conversations get very, very, very prickly around here, you know, whenever people approach religion, because I love discussing religion. Unfortunately, no one else does.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of yelling going on, that's for sure.
Yeah, and this is... I'm sorry. Typically, I don't interview authors of books such as this, but in this case, I did because of the hate mail that I received, by the way, because I wanted to clear the air. I did. I'll be very honest with you. We do more political stuff, you know. You know, we get presidential candidates and stuff like that. And I said, no, we're going to do this one. And everyone says, what are you doing that for? I said, no, because, you know, everyone hates me anyway. So I said, might as well talk about religion one more time.
Well, you know, there's a collision between religion and libertarian thinking that I think you can't ignore it. It's a tenet. It's a central thing. And when you get that religion is just sort of made up the way I think that it is, you know, and something as sacred as religion is made up, you have to question, you know, sort of the intrinsic meaning of, say, the Bible. That idea of what things mean, and in the case of libertarian philosophy, certainly what the Constitution means, you know, that's a giant can of worms.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's open them all.
Yeah, okay. As long as you're with me on that. If someone came up to you, you say, fine, I buy into that concept, you know, I want to do good, I want to be nice, and I want to have fun. How do I do that? Where do I start? I mean, how do I... Because most people are not having fun. Most people, when they say good, they say good, but they compromise because they say, well, that would be the right thing to do. However, you know, monetarily,
right,
I may lose some money. You know, things like that. They're constantly
right,
compromising themselves, and I dislike that. I often tell people, I said, if you want to know what money does for people, I said, when you stop at a light and there's a Mercedes-Benz sports car next to you, look in that car, and I said, I can guarantee you that person's never smiling. My point, you know, I said, they're no happier than you. In fact, you may be smiling, you may be listening to some rap, you know, rap music and be perfectly, you know, happy, and
right,
they're not. And I said, and you may be riding a junker, you know, like I ride, drive, you know.
Right.
But,
right.
And so, if people come to you, say, you know, I really want to shed the burden, you know, that life puts on me today, you know, which is a real problem.
Yeah.
How do I do that? May I call you Jim or James or Mr. Prodsman? How would you
James?
Like? James?
James is perfect.
Okay, James.
Yeah.
How would I do that, James? Where do I start? What would
okay. Here's what I would do. I would get a piece of paper and I would draw three circles that overlap in the middle on them. Like sort of they end up looking a little bit like Mickey Mouse.
Right, I saw
know,
that.
One's called do good, one's called be nice, and one's called have fun. Get that down and notice that little spot in the middle, and then say inside of your own head right this second, Joe, like right this second, are you in your heart doing good, being nice, and having fun on each of those three things? I would say, of course you are, and you probably think so too, and then you go, by gosh, that's cool. I'm in the sweet spot. Yeah. Right. And then later on, when your hot water heater breaks and you're trying to get it fixed in the middle of the night and it's 14 degrees outside, and you're down there doing that and you're yelling at your wife or you're kicking your dog or something, you ask yourself the same thing again,
okay.
And you realize you're probably not having fun. And see, Joe, I'm married to a woman who has fun brushing her teeth. I mean, she the bar is so high in my household. I could never measure up to that.
That's great. Well, I tell you, I have a lot of fun with my wife. In fact, we just came, it's freezing here in Tulsa today, and we just came back from a 35-mile bicycle ride that a good friend of mine, who, by the way, also jumped out of airplanes, and he condemns himself of that as well, you know. And, you know, he was Vietnam vet, jumping out of airplane. He thinks back, he goes, how stupid could we be when we're young, you know. And he's a super nice guy, well-read, intelligent guy, a lot of fun. And he said, do you want to go biking? He has this big bike-a-baton that he's going to go on, you know. He's going to go across the United States or something like that. And he drags me along. So we go, but my wife and I went along. And we had a great time this afternoon. And I consider myself very fortunate. Apparently you are very fortunate also. But not everyone is. But people tend to compromise. They say, well, I want to do this. And then all of a sudden, all the demons come in. They say, well, what about this? What about that? Well, you know, this. Well, what about that? But Doesn't religion play a role in this? Aren't we taught when we're very young by someone who wears a lot of funny clothing and a funny hat, you know, when we're children and they come along and they do all the hocus pocus in religion? I mean, this instills something in us which I think restricts us from our thinking, our critical thinking, our freedom, our ability to really be ourselves and be all we can be, if you want to look at it that way. Because we're born with these restrictions. Well, no, you can't do this. No, you can't. Although we know we don't believe it anymore, we can't seem to get out of that box.
Yeah, it feels like it's such a fundamental thing. And I actually don't think that we can get out of it. You know, even just some days standing around, things kind of seem spooky to me, and I go, whoa, what's that? But so, I don't think that we can get away from it in a really fundamental way. However, I do think that if we recognize that whatever it is, we're the architects of it, that our version of it is our version and it's not the version, I think if we can make that little leap, that we would be a lot closer to what's sacred.
Okay. All right, let me just take this moment. Folks, I know you're out there, and I know sometimes you call in. It's 646-652-4620. If you don't call in tonight, you're going to be punished. 646-652-4620. Please call in. Don't let me hang here now, you guys, okay? I know you're out there.
Right.
No. All right.
Will get them.
That's right. God will punish you, and if he misses you, I will get you. All right. Now, what is your concept of God?
Well, I people have asked me that, and I have two answers. The first is that a person who has the privilege of writing fiction is God. You actually get to make up the entire universe just out of the words you have. So it's as close to God as I think human beings can get.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the answer you were looking for. The other answer I have beyond that, and honestly, Joe, is I have no idea. Even what I think the most wild thing I can come up with can't possibly be the thing that's true. So I don't even worry about it.
Yeah. Well, where I got hate mail once was about a year ago when I had mentioned, we have a caller. Let's take this caller, please. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for us?
Yes, Joe. This is John from Tulsa.
Oh, how are you?
I wanted to ask Mr. James Protzman. Is that how you say your last name, James?
That's right.
Okay. When talking about God and in your book and some of these things, I was curious, is there a perspective that you come from? And I don't know if I missed this as far as like a religious Is there any type of religion that you identify with?
There is, yeah. I was raised as a Southern Baptist, and I left that denomination a long time ago. I got married to a woman who is a Unitarian Universalist, and to the extent that I actually go to church, which I do from time to time, that's where I go.
Okay. Well, and the reason I ask is that I've come out of the evangelical kind of community and have found that to be kind of restrictive in some of my beliefs, and also rather I've had trouble, more trouble with the narrowness of some of the opinions of some of my fellow attendees.
And yeah. Not very big in the fun department either.
No, not really. And in searching, I've come across the writings of William Penn and the Quakers.
Mm.
And the thing I'm finding is that really they had really a revolutionary way of looking at God even back in the 1600s, and a little bit more close to the Unitarian Church than I would say most people know.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked at the Quaker philosophy or some of their writings and things?
I have. I think I've had a phase of everything in my life, from Baptist to pagan to a Jewish phase, you know, you name it. And I'm fascinated by Quaker doctrine and ways of thinking. Yeah, absolutely.
It's been real refreshing for me. And I guess some of the principles that George Fox taught were, you know, are so counterintuitive to what's taught in the mainstream religions, and it certainly goes against the non-tithing thing. Probably is something, part of the reason you don't hear a lot about them. And
right. It seems so honest to me. That's one of the things I like about Quaker, is it seems, and I'm not an expert by any stretch, but my impression is of one of honesty and unvarnished, that it's what it is, without apology, without embellishment, without hyperbole.
And that's kind of the impression I've got, too. I've only been studying it for about 6 months, and I just find that it's very freeing spiritually. It narrows things down to just a relationship between you and God, and not you and other man. And as far as other men go, it's very much our mankind in general. It's very much treat others the way you'd like to be treated. And I would equate that to what you say, do good.
Do good, be nice, have fun, yeah.
Yeah, and being nice, certainly they were very nice, and their actions seemed to, their fruits, so to speak, seemed to indicate that they were a very kind and gentle people, at least in the past, and still are today. You don't hear a lot about them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion on that. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the question, and you know, I think everyone, all of us, are out on our journey, and I appreciate the chance to hear about yours.
We need to work on Joe now a little bit. I've been beating him up.
Oh, no. I agree with Joe, too.
No, he's wonderful. Thank you very much for coming on the show. Thanks, Joe, for letting me ask a question.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Thank you for calling in.
Bye-bye.
All right. Boy, that was an interesting question. When people ask me about God, may I tell you what my response is? And because I'd like to hear your response to it. Is that okay?
I'd love to hear it. You bet. I'd love to hear it.
Oh, and before I do that, it is now about 8:30, and it's time for station identification. Folks, this is Liberty Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano. We are pleased to have as our guest author James Brotzman, and his book, Jesus Swept. And we are talking about concepts of religion and how his book actually brings forth a refreshing look at religion, a different look at religion, to open up your mind so that you can do good, be nice, and have fun all at the same time. Now, when they ask, and by the way, do call in 646-652-4620, 646-652-4620. Remember, I know who you are. I can find you, so you better call in. I don't want to punish you. Now, I had an Uncle Louie when I was a kid. I lived in Harlem, you know. So, oh, by the way, there is a I think you hear a voice, a little voice in your head that says you can press when you want to speak. You don't have to press the one with me. Did you just press the one because a little hand came up on the computer said that you wanted to speak?
No, I didn't, Tom.
You didn't? Well, it came up anyway. Funny things happen. Anyway, when they ask me, my response typically is this. I am, just as my cat, as nice as my cat is incapable of ever comprehending calculus. Regardless of what we do, no matter what I show the cat, incapable of comprehending calculus. I am, in the same vein, incapable of comprehending the concept of God.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to that?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think you're absolutely right. I it seems to me that if you start with that, the most likely outcome is you end up as agnostic. And if you don't end up as agnostic and you end up sort of on the God side of things, you do so because you choose to, quote, believe something that you don't have any evidence that it's true. That's why they use the word believe. And, you know, lots of people do that. They've done it throughout the millennia, and I used to do it, but I don't anymore. I can't make a case that there's anything I could possibly understand that wouldn't be limited by my understanding. And so, what's the point of doing that?
Okay.
You see what I'm saying, though?
Yeah. No. Then I take the next step, and this is where people walk out on me, and I get labeled. Why believe in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I have a 18-year-old daughter who is off at college her first year. She's attending a little school here in North Carolina, and she's always been to Unitarian congregations, but she's coming into contact with a lot of people who are more traditional in Southern religion, and it's very seductive. I see her, we talk about it every week. She's praying. I mean, we never pray, we would pray or have moments of meditation, but, you know, sort of prayer, asking for stuff, and, you know,
right,
sort of hoping for some being to intervene. You know, she's trying that on and doesn't really know what to think of it. And, you know, as her dad, I'm observing it, and it looks to me like this is a really powerful force that people are attracted to. And, you know, where I came down, you know, with my daughter, at a certain point you say, you know, what works for you is good for me.
Right.
And
right.
You know, I think that's kind of where it has to end up.
Yeah, everyone has to make their own decision in that regard. But I often ask people, people say, well, I know there's a God. I said, well, if you know, you can't believe. And they go, what do you mean? I don't know. I said, knowing means you know. You know, 1 + 1 = 2. You can show it on a piece of paper. You know it. I don't believe.
Yeah.
And then one time I was challenged, and they said, okay, wise guy, do you believe your wife loves you? And I said, absolutely not. And they go, what kind of marriage do you have? I said, I know my wife loves me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and this is the conflict that I have. I said, well, if I know something, I cannot believe. If I don't know, I must believe. But then you're asking me to believe in something that I don't know, that I don't know. I mean, it's I believe,
right,
I don't know. And I said, to me, if we were in the Starship Enterprise, Spock would say, I'm sorry, that's illogical. do you think of that? I mean, you can discredit me if you'd like. I mean, this is your show today. I mean, you know, however you want to take that. What is your opinion?
I don't want to discredit you. I think that's what, you know, when I was talking about that it ultimately becomes something that people choose to believe.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's hard to disagree with that. Whether they call it no or not, they still choose to believe, and they actually know that they believe. And, you know, I think that that's really good. As I was saying, if that works for them, that's great. The place where it gets to be a problem, and, it's happening in the Air Force right now, for example, is when lots of other people really, really, really want you to share what they believe and don't give you certain benefits or opportunities if you don't share what they believe.
Right.
That's a problem. That's what happened. The evangelical movement inside the Air Force is a problem. It is crossing a line that shouldn't be crossed. And, you know, I think in institutions we see that, but I also see that in daily life. You know, it's why I don't think that prayer in schools is a healthy thing. It just, it absolutely infringes on and creates another class of person.
Right.
In a culture where there's a huge amount of pressure to be religious.
Right. I'm a big fan. I support the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Big fan, as well as the ACLU. So we're on the same page with that. And a lot of people don't understand, organizations such as that. I said, well, don't take anything on the surface. I said, look at the details, look at abstracts, look at the articles. And I said, read them all the way through and think. They won't do that because it will infringe on a belief system. And whenever someone changes a belief system, it creates a neurological change within a person, and they can't handle that. It's very difficult to do. Very, very difficult for people to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Again, I love these conversations anyway, but usually I never get this far. So I appreciate you being on the other side and you haven't hung up on me yet. But usually people do.
No, I love
it. What I found interesting is that in your book, I didn't know Hook was as young as she was until towards the end of the book. Was that intentional? Or did I miss something at the beginning of the book?
No, if you had, you could have gotten it if you were reading very, very closely. It was a little ambiguous, and I wanted her to seem, in some cases, younger, and in some cases, older than she was. And at the same time, she also had to end up being the sort of daughter of Liz.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I really liked her. We have two people on the phone right now. Let's see if we can get, let me get this one on the phone first. Hold on. Let's see what we have here. You're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please. Hello? 704. Area code 704. You're on the air. Area code 704. You're on the air. Your question? Oop, they just hung up. I wonder why they did that. All right, we have another one, though. We have a backup. Okay, we have area code 918. Your first name, and you have a question or a comment, please.
Hello, this is Pat.
Hi, Pat.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Pat.
Hi. I need to step back to the discussion that you were having a few minutes ago, and I wondered, getting back to basics realm, I have always wondered if people have their own unique ideas about God and whether there is a God or not, why do you think, what is the basis, the origin of just man's search for God, small g, anyway? Why do all societies seem to do that? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Yeah.
No, you can stay on the air. Pat, you can stay on the air in case you have a follow-up question.
Yeah,
it's okay.
Please.
Stay on the air, please.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Well, you know, there's a couple of possible answers to that, and I try them all on. If you look at physiology and sort of microchemistry and brain studies today, some scientists will say they've isolated a section of the brain that actually is the source of spirituality and religious or sort of mystical thought, and it's different from other parts of the brain. So it could simply be, or it could very well be, that that is part of, you know, the human being. And, you know, my friends who are religious would say, well, God made it that way, and so that we could understand God, or at least approach God. And, you know, I don't know if either of those things are true, if it's actually a part of the brain or not, but it's kind of an interesting idea. I think in most cases, when you look at developmental research with children, they want explanations for things that don't make any sense, and they make them up all the time. You know, I've raised two kids, and a number of stories we made up about everything you can imagine in nature and in human being, you know, we just made stuff up to explain things. And sometimes they were true, and sometimes it was just preposterous nonsense, and it was always fun. But that's an instinct, I think. I think we have a fundamental instinct to want to understand stuff, and if we can't, then we're happy to make something up that fits the bill. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I just think it would be helpful if we all understood that that's what we were doing.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. That's a very interesting answer. Thank you very much. I really
appreciate that. Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. You bet. Thanks for calling.
Uh-huh.
Thank you, Pat. Bye-bye now. Oh, we're getting some call activity here.
Isn't that
nice? Good, yeah. Boy, we have good questions, good calls. Too bad we lost 708 area code. Don't know what happened to that telephone.
Yeah.
Oh, here's a 704. Let's see what 704 has to say. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Hi, James.
Hi.
Hello.
It's Betsy.
Oh, hi,
from
Betsy.
Monroe, North Carolina. I called earlier, and I could hear you, but I don't believe y'all could hear me.
No, we couldn't, and we thought that you had hung up. I apologize. I don't know what happened to the line, Betsy.
That's quite all right.
This is my friend, Joe. She's a political blogger that I work with.
Oh, wonderful.
Your conversation has been fascinating. I tuned in about 25 minutes ago and didn't want to stop listening to call in. It's been very fascinating. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Very great.
Great. Do you have a question or a comment? I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
No, I was just going to ask. Betsy's a virtual friend. We barely know each other in real life. I was going to ask if she's had a chance to read my book yet, or if it's on her wish list.
It's on my – actually, I've ordered it, but I have not had a chance to read it, and I cannot wait, because everyone I know who's read it has wonderful things to say about it. I think character development is probably what I'm hearing is the best part of the book.
Hmm.
Great characters.
Oh, yes. I agree. When I finished the book, I missed them all. I just missed all the characters, except for Frank. I didn't miss Frank at all. Frank and Cinco, I didn't miss it all. All right, if you just hold on, you know, we have someone else calling in. Let's say if we can have a three-way conversation here. Let's see who we have here. Caller, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello.
Hello. This is Liberty Talk Radio. You're calling in. Your name, first name, please, and what is your question? Hello? Oop, we lost him. Did we lose you? Hello?
Looks like we lost him.
Okay, we lost him. Here's another one. Okay, very good. All right, area code 918, you're on the air. Your first name and your question or comment, please. Thank you for calling.
This is Jim, and I just got in about 15 minutes ago, finding the conversation very interesting. James, I haven't read your book yet, but I see that it says that looking at his life based on principle, I tried to live my life in the as a principled person based upon the teachings of Jesus, but I've kind of divorced myself from organized church and religion recently, because I just find it to be very hypocritical and judgmental. And just wondered again, without knowing the context of your book, how much you address the religious principles and philosophies, or if you address the issue of what's right or wrong in the world of organized religion, particularly Christianity in America.
Thank you for the great question. As one of my one of my reviewers somewhere along the way wrote, this book skewers a number of sacred cows. I don't have a lot of patience with most of what passes as organized religion today, and Jesus Swept has a lot of fun with religion, and you know, I think people who hold things in a much more sort of sacred, reverent way might find it a little maybe not alarming, but not very appealing. But that said, the center of the book, as someone who was baptized, I'm very familiar with Jesus, and this book is about who Jesus could be, and I think that for me the question is not so much what would Jesus do, but who would Jesus be, and I think Jesus would be a person who does good, is nice, and has fun, and so that's kind of how I'm coming at it, and In this particular book, people take turns being Jesus. And I actually have a website where people sometimes take turns being Jesus. And in that month when they have that job, it changes who they are. And none of them are religious, the folks I'm talking about. They're looking at this as literature and sort of creativity. But trying on the idea of what Jesus would do and who Jesus would be, whether you believe in Jesus or not, is, I think it's a useful thing to do. I think it's a good way to live.
Well, interesting. I'll look forward to reading your book and gaining your perspective. I don't read a whole lot of religious-oriented books, but I wondered if you were familiar with Dr. Robin Meyer and his progressive Christian writings.
I'm not. I'm operating out in the land of fiction, and I should alert you, this book is, I don't know, Joe, it's kind of racy, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, not for me it's not, but for some people it might be. But it's not, Jim, it's not your traditional religious book, and it's... I'm searching for the word that it's a metaphor or whatever, you know. It's a and this you have to read the storylines to appreciate, you know, where James is trying to depict, you know, the goodness in people and the not so goodness in people. And I found it just fascinating because it's eclectic in a way, you know. So I think you'd really enjoy it. Buy the book, by the way. That's why we have James on here. We're going to promote his book. You got to buy the book or else we'll come after you. You know that.
Well, I think that makes it more interesting, the fact that the underlying message that you're wanting to convey is done in a fictional approach for character development.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like you said, using literary techniques that are not your traditional in the traditional vein of religious oriented books.
That's correct. It's not a religious book, if you will, you know, in that sense whatsoever. I can tell you that after reading it.
Well, again, yeah. I'm you know, going through my journey to understand what makes the world go round, that I find this conversation and topic interesting, and look forward to reading the book.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for your call.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Right. And we have another person here. Oh, here we go. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Your name, your first name, please.
Andy.
Andy. Okay, Andy, and your question or comment, please.
Well, I just had a quick question about doing, it's all right to go back to the be nice, do good, be nice, have fun,
I guess
philosophy. Is that something that, I looked at the book on Amazon, and I guess it reads as a novel. Is there more on that, I guess, philosophy in the book, or is that the theme of the book, or where can I hear more about, or where can I read more about that philosophy, if you will? And I'll take this off.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There's really two things going on here. This all got started as a bumper sticker, do good, be nice, have fun, and then I wrote a novel to bring that to life, and now I'm actually sort of independently promoting both ideas. So there's this book that's about this crazy wild ride that includes magic writing on a silver bracelet that says, do good, be nice, have fun, and it changes people's lives, and it's sort of like finding the Ten Commandments or something. That's going on in the novel. Then out in the world, I've started a cause called Do Good, Be Nice, Have Fun. It's kind of a cause without a cost. It's just a way of thinking. And they converge in the book, for sure. The book is and the book explains in a lot of sort of practical examples. Doesn't explain, but it tells stories in a practical way about how people use this idea. For example, there's a woman in the story named Hook who ends up, she's a fisherman, and she's been in the business of catching sharks, and she discovers this philosophy and wonders to herself whether or not she should keep killing sharks. Like, it's fun, but is it good and is it nice? And so she's grappling with that in this book. And there's a lot of examples like that, but they're all pretty, you know, outrageous. It's not a nonfiction book by any stretch. So, yeah, I think you have to sort of read the novel to get a full view of what it might look like to think about do good, be nice, have fun as a philosophy.
Okay, I think we lost our caller for some reason. Sometimes our callers, when they have the telephone or a cell phone, they press a button and bingo, they're gone, and they don't realize that they may still be listening, but they're gone. Do you sell the bumper stickers? Do you sell bumper stickers with that saying on it?
I give them away. If anybody wants one, they can go to DGBNHF, Do Good, Be Nice, Have Fun.com, and there's a contact thing. Just send me your address, and I'll put a bumper sticker in the mail to you. It's my little virtual campaign to change the world one bumper sticker at a time.
Okay.
They're actually decals, not bumper stickers.
Okay. By the way, is your the caller who is on there, is your name Betsy?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure that I didn't forget your name, and you're still on the air, and you're welcome to stay on the air. Do you have any comments for us?
No, I am enjoying listening, and I had told James that I would call in tonight, and I wrestled the phone out of my teenager's hand before she could call her boyfriend.
And that would have been a long conversation, I'll bet.
I never would have gotten the phone if I hadn't done that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think your book sort of dispels the notion that, you know, religion has to be a structure. And therein lies a problem, because once we have structure, which is dogma, which is absolute, you and I could never, ever be friends or get along or do anything together, because we're working from different principles. And my dogma says that anyone who doesn't believe in what I believe in, of course, is the bad guy. And then your dogma says the same thing. So the only option we have is to pick up arms and shoot each other, and the first person who shoots wins. And it seems that that's the way, if we look at history, that's the way the world has really evolved, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I love how you just described that, Joe, because it cuts to the heart of the matter, and that is, if you have a version of God that you have, and I have a different version, one of us has to be wrong. And I can't make a case why one of us would have to be wrong, so we either actually all have the same idea or all of us are wrong. And I think once you look at it that way, you kind of... The pride of having a certain denomination and the commitment to converting people to your view of the world sort of loses some of its attraction.
Right. You know, when I have a conversation with someone, being in the state of Oklahoma, this happens very often, they typically want to know, no, seriously, they typically want to know what religious denomination you are. I don't know why that's important.
One of the first questions, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have time, and I can tell you 40, 50 stories, but generally speaking, when the conversation gets to that point, you know, they'll say, well, I'm a Methodist, or when I go to the Methodist church, or I say, that's very nice, you know. And they say, which one do you go to? I say, on Sunday, my wife and I go biking. We observe nature. And they get angry. I mean, you can tell the expression. I mean, they've a lot of they're concerned that we don't belong to any religion, especially theirs. And after that statement, we no longer converse. Everything ends right then and there. Everything ends. Wow. And I think to myself, well, if you are a person of religion, shouldn't you be the one to transcend that? And if I'm the person of no religion, shouldn't I be taking your position? It seems to be in reverse.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, my wife has a saying, and I think it's absolutely right. She says, religion does one thing very well. It divides. It separates people.
Mm.
And it does. It does. Dogma separates people. You know, it's historically. Mm-hmm. Anyway, James, we have about, let's see, how much more time we have. We have about 3 minutes to go. And I want to give this 3 minutes to you to promote your book, to say whatever you want to say. It's all yours, okay?
Great. Well, thank you so much. And Betsy, thank you for calling in. It's nice to have a friendly spirit on the line with me here. Joe, this is really fun. What I've learned in a few interviews with people that everybody brings a completely different set of interests and passions to everything, including my book. I just love how people zero in on certain characters.
Yes.
You love Liz. I love Liz.
she's my girl.
And it's really interesting to see what people take away and how it affects, how the written word affects what's important to them. And I think that's exactly how it is with all of our major things in writing. It's that way with the Bible. It's that way with our Constitution. It's that way with dogma. It's that way with whatever is written. Everybody brings their own interpretation. And my view is that if we can recognize that, then that's about as good as it's going to get. And that's what I try to do in Jesus' book. I try to shake things up. It's a little wild sometimes, but it's got a good heart and it lands in a very good place. And so I hope that folks who are interested in challenging their ideas about things will pick up the book and give it a read. Most folks seem to really enjoy it. So thanks again, Joe. I really appreciate this. It's been a real privilege to be with you tonight.
Privilege is all ours. Truly enjoyed it. We had a lot of activity on the phone, which is really terrific, you know, because people have a tendency not to call in if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the dialogue was just great. I really appreciate it. And good luck to you. Good luck to you. To you on your new book, as well as Jesus Whipped. And we hope all of our listeners will go out and buy the book first thing tomorrow morning.
Very good.
Okay. Good night, James. Bye-bye now.
Good night.
And bye-bye, Betsy. Okay. Very good. Hey, that was fascinating. That was fascinating. I really enjoyed that. That was one of my most favorite interviews. I tell you, I really enjoyed it. Folks, this is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Grant Shaker's Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government's like training wheels. Your ride is controlled, and that isn't any more fun. Ron Paul has a sign at his desk that says, "Don't steal. The government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.